This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. You might be surprised to hear that a man from Maryland with a collection of Ku Klux Klan memorabilia, medallions, T-shirts, robes, hoods, is black. His name is Darryl Davis. For decades, he's arranged to meet face-to-face with Klan members and to attend Klan rallies across the country. His quest, he says, is to get them to answer one question. How can you hate me if you don't even know me? His collection of memorabilia isn't a celebration of the Klan's message, but rather tokens of accomplishment. All of the pieces are from former Klan members whom he befriended after they left the group. In 1998, Darryl Davis published a book about his experiences called Clandestine Relationships, A Black Man's Odyssey in the Ku Klux Klan. He's planning to release an updated edition in 2015. 5 weeks ago, Davis was honored by the Search for Common Ground, a nonprofit dedicated to international conflict resolution, for his effort to end violent confrontation. And Darryl Davis joins me in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, Darryl, you're a professional musician, and I want listeners to hear you playing at that Common Ground Award ceremony last month.
Well, come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. I ain't faking. Whole lot of shaking going on. I said, come on over, baby.
Am I right that it was that kind of boogie-woogie music that connected you with the first member of the Klan you met with?
Yes, it is. And I want to point out also that I befriended these members while they were still active in the Klan, and we became better friends after they left.
Okay. Tell me about that first meeting.
That first meeting, I was 1983. Country music had made a resurgence in this country. So, you know, if you wanted to make a living as a musician, you played country music. And I enjoyed country music, so I joined a country band. And I was the only black guy in the band, and consequently the only black guy in many of the places where we would play. So we played a place in Frederick, Maryland, called the Silver Dollar Lounge. It was an all-white bar, truck stop bar. And when I say all-white, I don't mean that blacks could not go in there. What I mean is that blacks did not go in there, and that was by their own choice. And it was a good choice because they were not welcome. So here I was in the Silver Dollar Lounge, and I came off the bandstand on the first break after doing a set. And I was walking to a table to sit down, and a white gentleman came up behind me and put his arm around my shoulder and said, "I really enjoy your all's music." And I shook his hand and thanked him. And he says, "You know, this is the first time I ever heard a black man play the piano like Jerry Lee Lewis." And I wasn't offended, but I was kind of taken aback, like, you know, where is he coming from? Doesn't he know?
Yeah.
And innocently, not even facetiously, I said to him, "Well, where do you think Jerry Lee Lewis learned how to play?" And he says, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, he learned that same style from where I learned it, from black blues and boogie-woogie piano players." "Oh, no, 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 no. Jerry Lee invented that." I said, "No, he didn't." We argued back and forth. I told the man, you know, that I know Jerry Lee personally. He's a good friend of mine. He's told me himself where he learned how to play. The guy didn't buy that I knew Jerry Lee or that he learned anything from black people. But he wanted to buy me a drink because he was fascinated that I could play this white style of music. So I let him buy me a cranberry juice, and we got to talking. And then he made the remark, "You know, this is the first time I ever sat down and had a drink with a black man." And now I'm curious, you know, this guy's in his 40s probably. And how is it that he had never done that before? And I asked him. And at first he didn't answer me. Then eventually he told me, "I'm a member of the Ku Klux Klan." So I, you know, at that point I realized the power of music, how it can bring people from diverse ends of the spectrum together in the middle. Music brought us together, where had I come into that bar on my own, I probably would have had to fight my way out.
And at that point, did you have any idea that you would go on to have other conversations with members of the Klan?
Not immediately, but I've always been curious. How can you hate me when you don't even know me? And that started in childhood when I had rocks thrown at me while I was marching in a Cub Scout parade and by white spectators in 1968.
Where was that?
That was in Belmont, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. You know, that was the height of the Civil Rights Movement, 1968. I was 10 years old. And I could not understand it. You know, why are they hitting me? They don't even know me. They've never seen me before, never spoken to me. And just because of the color of my skin, I'm being attacked. So how can you hate me when you don't even know me? So the Klansman, you know, this is years later, 1983, gave me his number because he was that curious about me. He wanted me to call him anytime I was to return to the Silver Dollar Lounge because he wanted to bring his friends, right, his Klan friends, Klansmen and Klanswomen, to see this black guy. I'm not sure he called me a black guy, but to see this black guy play piano like Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, that was a novelty for him. So I agreed. I called him, you know, every 6 weeks on a Wednesday or Thursday and said, hey, man, you know, we're going to be down at the Silver Dollar Lounge this week and come on out. And he would come. And he'd bring other Klan members. And they would watch me play. They would get out there on the dance floor and dance and carry on, not in their robes and hoods. You know, they came in regular clothes. And so I would meet, you know, some of them. Some of them did not want to meet me. You know, they would back off and watch me from afar. And this went on until the end of 83, when I left the band and went back to playing rock and roll and blues and other things that were going on in 1984. But when I decided to write the book, I decided, you know what, I'm going to start with that guy. I'm going to contact him and have him hook me up with the Klan leader of Maryland. I'm going to interview that guy, and then I'm going to spread out, go up north, go down south, go to the Midwest, to the West, and interview various Klan groups, because I need to get that answer as to how can you hate me when you don't even know me.
And what has been the typical answer? What kind of range in answers have you gotten?
Oh, gosh. You know, nobody can really answer the question, you know, because when you're sitting there talking with somebody one-on-one, you find that you have more in common with them than you do in contrast. And it's hard to hate somebody. You may disagree with the person, but it's hard to hate somebody who speaks the same language you do, who may even like some of the same things that you do, who's read the same books that, you know, that you have, that kind of thing. So you find those commonalities, and then, you know, they'll tell me that I'm inferior. I mean, I've heard them tell me that, you know, that black people have smaller brains than white people, and you know, we're not the chosen ones. You know, we came from Ham, and we came from Cain, and you know, all those kind of, you know, different analogies. But they end up saying, you know, I don't hate you. Whereby before they did hate me, now they tolerate me, kind of thing. But then the more you find that you have in common, the less you have in contrast, and that hate tends to diminish. And then, you know, you become friends.
That's Daryl Davis, a musician who lives in Silver Spring, here on WIPR, Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his decades of conversations with Klan members, which he's described in his book, Clandestine Relationships, A Black Man's Odyssey in the Ku Klux Klan. Several KKK members you've spoken with have left the Klan and given you their robes.
That's right, because the hate has been shedded. No, they don't hate anymore. They begin to see the value, the humanity of the person sitting across from them. Just because that person has a different color doesn't always mean that person is inferior to them.
And you've kept the robes.
I've kept the robes, yeah. One day I'm going to open up a museum. You know, two of the most important things that I've learned, and I continue to go to Klan rallies across the country, et cetera. But two of the most important things that I've learned is this. Number one, while you are actively learning about someone else, at the same time, you are passively teaching them about yourself. So you always want to be upfront. You always want to be honest, because you think you're gleaning all this information from this Klansman. He's also learning from you by your behavior, by your actions, etc. So you always want to keep everything open in the front. The second thing is this. When two enemies are talking, they're not fighting. They may be yelling and screaming, they may be disagreeing, but at least they're talking. And while they're talking, they're not fighting. It's when the talking ceases that the ground becomes fertile for violence. So you always want to keep the lines of communication open with those with whom you disagree.
Well, but I cannot imagine that every conversation you've tried to start has ended well.
No, I've had to put somebody in the hospital or put somebody in jail, you know, when I've been attacked for no reason other than the color of my skin. But fortunately, that, you know, has not been the most common occurrence. Initially, when I would meet with these people, now everybody in the Klan all across the country, they know my name if they don't know me. So they know that I'm black, you know, they've heard or whatever. But initially, I would have my secretary call them and set up the interview and not tell them that I was black. So it was a shock for them when I would show up. Sometimes they would say, okay, yeah, I'll talk to him, thinking I'm a white writer. And they would invite me over to their home. So when I'm standing on the porch knocking on the door, you know, you can imagine the reaction they got when I said, okay, I'm Daryl Davis. You know, other times, you know, we meet at a neutral place, a restaurant or a hotel room, something like that.
And you set these interviews up saying, I'm writing a book.
Yes, which was true, you know.
What kind of reaction from the Black community? I would think there must be some in the Black community who...
Just like a Klan member, you know, a Black person is not stamped out of a standard cookie cutter
mm-hmm.
either.
Right.
You know, they come from all walks of life. Black people who know me, my friends, well, you know, they accept me because they already know that I'm crazy. But those who've read my book or who've seen me interviewed, or perhaps the ones who might be hearing this interview right now that you're conducting, will get a better sense and not rush to conclusion. Because, you know, that's what the Klan does. That's what bigoted people do. They jump to conclusion. You know, the word prejudice, to prejudge. All right? I've had some Blacks, you know, call me an Oreo, call me an Uncle Tom. I was challenged by somebody in the NAACP one time, a leader, saying, you know, how can you do this? You know, we work hard to sit down, I mean, to get 10 steps forward, and you sit down with the enemy and have dinner, and you put us 20 steps back.
Hmm.
And then I pull out my robes and hoods and say, look, this is what I've done to put a dent in racism. How many robes and hoods have you collected? And then they shut up.
You're talking about huge transformations for Klansmen who leave in conversation with you. Big changes in their lives. How have you changed in this conversation?
Well, I've changed in that I've grown to be more patient. I've grown to have more hope. Because, you know, we, as children, we hear the terms, a tiger will never change its stripes. A leopard doesn't change its spots. You know, people are what they are. They don't change. But I've seen these changes. I never got into this research to write this book and do these interviews with the intention of converting anybody. That was not my goal at all. I wasn't trying to say, hey, you know, you need to get out of the Klan because this is wrong. No, all I want to know was, how can you hate me when you don't even know me? You know, you're sitting there talking to me. I have a college degree. I've been around the world 3 times. I've been in 53 different countries on 6 continents. You know, I've been in 49 of our states. I've learned a lot. How can you hate me? And I know as much about the Klan, if not more, than you do. And so they began to see that, and they began to respect that. And slowly but surely, some of them, their hatred and their ideology begins to evaporate, and they began to see things in a new light. They did that on their own. I was the impetus for it, but I never set out to convert them. So when I saw this happening, I was shocked. When a Klan leader told me, you know, that, you know, he wanted to get out of the Klan and that he was sorry. He apologized to me for ever being in the Klan, even though he had never done anything to me. He had told me he hated me, told me he didn't like me, you know, but he apologized to me. And today he's one of my best friends. And I said, you know what, I need to continue this. I need to continue that conversation.
I really appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Darryl Davis. He's author of the book Clandestine Relationships, A Black Man's Odyssey in the Ku Klux Klan. Last month, he received the Common Ground Award for his efforts to end violent confrontation. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, a poet writes about her transgender child. Stay with us on 88.1.